Okay, people, yes, it's me. I'm back again. I'm doing my Facebook Live side by side.
Okay, 3, 2, 1, it's jam.
And that's what we're going to be doing right now, right here, right now. We're going to be jamming, but in a different way. We're going to be jamming with someone who I got to admit, I'm very happy to have with me at this point in time. His name is Sumit Gupta. And Sumit is a rising star at this moment in time within the Mortgage Advisor Group. Thank you so much for being a part of the Sumit. I'm going to be monitoring any kind of comments. And guys, please feel free to ask any question that you want to. Give us a like, let us know that you're here. This is going to be a fun one because, let's face it, Sumit's speciality is in something which is unique, which is the commercial property sector. And he looks at things like properties, like I don't know, warehouses, fast food restaurants. He will look at office blocks, looks at leases, will take things to court. But let me not say any more about it. Let me introduce Sumit to you. Sumit, would you like to do the honors?
Yes, sure. Thanks, Hari. Thank you for having me here. It's my pleasure that, I'm sharing my story with you. So by profession, I'm a property surveyor, but I do a lot more than what one can expect from a property surveyor. So basically have multiple businesses, but all around property. So I own a surveying practice because I'm a surveyor. I also own a consultancy practice where we cover with some paralegal work. I also have a training academy, which is Property Expert Academy, where we teach people how to invest in property creatively with as low as £1. Yes, a new way of investing in property. So this is not the old traditional way where you're looking for, just like you put 25% deposit and borrow 75% from the bank. Those days, of course, are over. And also, we can't really make the money that we can make by using the new strategies. So I'm very much, teaching people because I started my journey almost 20 years back. Those days, there was no such training available. So I decided, what I've learned in a hard way, I'll package it by way of my books. So I've written almost half a dozen of books on property and finance. They're available on Amazon. And I've sent some of the links anyway, so you might be able to find that on this group. And then also some online training programs, some recordings that you can see by way of DVDs. So effectively making people's life easy so that they can shorten their journey. What I've done in 20 years, they can just do in a few years.
And that's good. So tell us, that's a lot of information to give there. And if you guys are watching, by all means, feel free to ask any questions. Feel free to add any comments there. Of course, I gather that you're not from the UK originally. Where are you from?
I'm originally from India.
Okay. Which part?
It's Mumbai.
Mumbai. Okay, yeah. Cool. So, well, that's a home of Bollywood.
City, yeah.
So, what made you come over here to the UK?
Basically, when I was in Mumbai, I always have this, a feeling that I want to do something bigger and better in my life. And I hope many of you here would also have sometime in their life this question that I really want to do something more, not just this 9-to-5 or just the basic thing. So I kind of feel like I was not just born to do the basic things. So one day I went into this webinar it was a seminar in Mumbai, and they were teaching dream big, become rich, earn and learn in UK. So I decided, okay, fine, this is what I want to really do. And then they of course explained me how this works. So I then joined their program. And then I came here initially based on that. So I worked for, different companies. Initially, I was doing some odd jobs. In fact, to be honest, initially, first when I came to this country, because I don't come from, a very rich family or background. So I had to really borrow money to even land in this country. And of course, when I was in the flight, I was counting how much money do I have. And I was looking at it like, if I would not get a job straight away in UK, how many weeks can I survive? So I found not much. So I was initially just eating one time a day a meal for first few months until I got a proper office job. And the journey started from there. And then, of course, there was a lot of ups and downs. To just cut the whole story short, then I started doing more and more studies. And now I've got 5 certified qualifications in real estate. And I'm proud to say that I'm a member of Royal Institution of Chartered Surveyor, which is the world's most recognized body that recognizes the professionals in property, land, and construction, which means it's clearly says the person who is champion in the property would become a member of RICS.
And that's fantastic because the RICS is let's face it, if you haven't got an RICS qualification behind you, you really aren't a surveyor in that sense.
Yes.
You know, especially for mortgage purposes, which is what we're going to cover in today. Now, I understand that, you know, you can deal with residential, but we primarily want to focus more on the commercial. There have been a couple of questions that have come out from me sharing your, you know, that you're going to be coming on here. One of the biggest questions came out, which was a jargon one. What is a break clause in a lease?
Yeah, break clause, basically, you know, we negotiate. There's something in commercial property. Normally, first of all, let me explain. So there are some hats of terms that normally agreed between landlord and tenant. Now, of course, tenant always wants to have the all favorable clause in the lease. Same at the same time, leasehold owner or the tenant going in also like to have all the favorable clause for themselves. So break clause is something which gives comfort to the leasehold owner or the tenant that at a certain period of time, by fulfilling or complying with certain condition, they will have a right to break the lease by serving a notice.
Right. And, okay.
Yeah. And the reason people do that is, of course, they want some flexibility. Let's say they were signing up 25 years lease. They don't want to really be on the hook for 25 years. So they like to have some kind of flexibility, especially many things can change in the life, or if they're not certain whether the business can change. And also many times I've dealt with, you know, all those blue chip companies, Sainsbury's, or if you, you know, discuss any of those banks, Santander and all, they always try to keep themselves more flexible. But I know at the same time, the lender do not like it if they find a break clause. So there are other arrangements also done. So normally these leases are written under Landlord and Tenant Act 1954, but there are some leases that are granted outside the act as well. So there could be other sorts of, you know, arrangement that can be done. So in short, the break, I mean, your question, coming back to your question, the break clause in a lease is effectively give a right to a leasehold owner, or it could be both ways. Sometimes the break clause could be applied by the landlord as well. But normally people prefer to keep it tenant only break clause. So always watch out for this clause. You know, it has to be like a clearly written tenant only, then only the tenant can, you know, exercise. Otherwise, even the landlord can exercise. And that could be really quite, you know, that could be very harmful for a leasehold owner. Imagine, because other thing is, if you see the commercial property, I'll also explain why the commercial property really make such a beautiful, you know, contribution in a property investor's life. One is the commercial leases are written on FRI, which is called fully repairing and insuring.
Yeah.
Which means basically, you know, like when these leases are written or granted, these hats of terms are agreed between the parties. Now, if the landlord, I mean, and on, because it's a fully repairing and insuring, and also it's a business, it's not like a house, you're just renting a house, you can leave the house in 6 months or a year. You are running a business. Imagine how much money you will invest. Imagine if you're running a restaurant or any other business, how much money you invest in your fit outs, isn't it? Like some of the fit out I've seen, like people have end up spending 200,000-300,000 pounds very comfortably, you know, in the restaurant business itself. Like they've had one of them and two, three. And imagine if you are really spending 200,000-300,000 pounds just on a fit out. You don't want tomorrow the landlord give you a notice after a year saying, you know, here is your notice, we want to break the clause. I mean, we want to break the lease or terminate the, you know, contract. So that could be very much harmful. So of course, that's why people like to have the break clause, which says tenant only break clause, especially when it's like tenant. Of course, when we are acting for the people, either it's a tenant or the landlord at the same time, we always safeguard their interest. If I'm acting for a leasehold owner or tenant, I will always ensure that I agree and make sure the heads of terms that we are agreeing is safeguarding my client interest. Or if I'm acting for the freehold owner, I'll do everything which is to protect my landlord's interest.
Okay.
And that's why it's very important. You know, many times people just try and get any commercial lease without getting a professional advice. I'll always suggest, you know, to get a professional advice before you're getting involved in a lease. Because not only does the this break clause and all, but there could be many things. Dilapidations is one of them. Many people, I've asked many of them, you know, have you got schedule of condition when you initially moved in? People say, no, I haven't got anything. And, you know, sometimes the dilapidation is one of the things which is like a exit bill. So when you exit from a lease or exiting from the, you know, the premises, the landlord can send you, this is your bill, your exit bill, which is like a dilapidation schedule. And then you may end up paying, you know, huge money. And also, since it is a fully repairing and insuring lease, it's so many things, which means like if the landlord changes the roof, let's say you took a lease in 2019 and 2020 landlord decide to change the whole roof and say, I end up paying 100,000 pound on this. Here is your proportion of 50%. Pay me 50 grand. Could be a huge, isn't it?
Yes, and this is why I wanted you on here, because let's face it, the commercial market is not as fluid or as well recognized as the residential market. There's huge differences. So as an example, one of the best things that you mentioned was when it came to the lease. So residential mortgage market, any property that has a lease of over 90 years is considered a great property to have, you know, and therefore the value needs to be, you know, accordingly, because it's got a long lease. With commercial properties, especially with what you was talking about in terms of the business, it's an ongoing concern. 10 years, 25 years, those kinds of leases, are they considered good? What's considered a bad lease length?
I mean, so anything below 7 years, normally, because I would say like in terms of like bad lease is like something which is not protected, which means you haven't got a protected right on it. So usually anyways, anything over 7 years, you have a right to protect it. You can ask your landlord to grant the lease under 1954 Act, Landlord and Tenant Act 1954. But if it is less than 7 years, then you haven't got much, you know, rights on it, which means, you know, landlord can kick you out after 7 years or whatever time period you have.
And that's so important to know. You know, again, those guys of you who are watching this, even on the replay, if you're investors or are looking to get into that kind of investment, then these are the things that you need to consider, you know, and especially in terms of property. We all understand about leases. So just to a certain degree. And what you talked about within the break clause, also the additional tip that you talked about with the tenant only part of it, make sure you review your contract. So as an example, Sumit, I would like to see what the actual process is. If a person goes in and says, right, I've seen a warehouse, this warehouse looks really good, I want to go for it, I want to buy it. Now, can they buy it and put it on a lease straight away, or is it that they're buying the lease off the original freeholder? Just in general.
Yeah, so I mean, so there are a few things in the property law. Usually, sometimes it's not possible to just buy freehold. That's why they call virtual freehold. So, for example, let's say if you have a commercial unit on the ground floor, and on top of commercial unit you have another units. It could be office space or the residential flats, right? Now, if you have the whole building with the commercial on the ground floor, some other unit above, you can't just take a freehold of the ground floor, right? Because either you take a freehold of the whole building, then you have to get everything. But then sometimes people don't want to go and buy the whole thing. But then there's something called virtual freehold, which is as good as freehold. So you can probably ask the landlord to grant you 999 years lease. That will become without no ground, with no ground rent to pay. So that way you become a freehold owner technically. But then again, having said that, you are still responsible to, you know, since I mentioned the mostly commercial leases are, regardless of how much the length is, they may be more likely FRI, fully repairing insuring. So tomorrow, even if the roof goes wrong or some pointing or external repair work is done, although it's not outside your property, it may be on the top floor, you are still responsible to pay a share in that expenditure.
Okay. But guys, if you guys are enjoying this, if you guys are enjoying the content at the moment, feel free to give that like. Rufus Kits, thank you. Hey, I hope that you're okay. Feel free to ask any kind of question, because again, you know, a lot of the guys that we got in this group are investors, you know, or want to get into the investing world, you know, but not totally sure how to do it. So this is for you guys, as part of being as part of this group, is a benefit for you. I hope that this is going to be a real benefit as well. So if you're enjoying the content, please let us know. Give us that like, give us that share. Okay, right. So moving on to the next part. One of the interesting dynamics about investing in commercial is land.
Yes.
Now, land, again, you can do so much with land. It's not just development on property. You can develop billboards on there, which would advertise, you know, things such as, I don't know, McDonald's is going to be opening up next door, or the next nearest KFC is 5 miles down the road, petrol stations, those kind of things. And your rate of return can be quite high because you're not having to do any outlay. You know, it'll be the advertising company that can do the outlay, and it can then be the advertising company subcontracting out to the product holders. This is the billboard. Why don't you advertise? Print media is fantastic. You don't, you know, and you attract people who are traffic, moving traffic, physical traffic, you know, to come to your next stop. But can, you know, the thing about land is that people may not be fully aware. There's things like unregistered land. There's things like ownership of the land, the different types of land which is out there, brownfield land, green land, protected land, those kinds of things. How would someone go about finding out? Because it's not exactly something that you can do via land registry.
Yes, Harley, that's like a million pound worth of question. You know, like
thank
I'm going to.
Thank you. I'm more than good looks.
I've got a separate training program for that, which is like property expertise that deals with like all this commercial property investment strategies, okay. How to buy land, do acquisition. But very quickly, I will say, you know, I mean, there's no straightforward answer to that because land varies a lot. I mean, it depends where you're buying it, what type of land is, like, as you clearly mentioned, like brown belt, green belt, so many differences, and what's around surrounding is available and how much the potential. I mean, some land comes with planning. Sometimes, you know, we do deals with subject to planning. So there are so many things that possibly can be done on those deals. And certainly one can make, you know, I tell you something. Whenever I ask people, you know, this question, like, and when I explain the things about investing in commercial property, and I ask, why don't you consider investing in commercial? Then, you know, the answer they give, they said, but we don't know how. And that's where the whole course is designed, where we explain them step by step how you can really invest. Because the thing is, not many people are available there out who can teach this thing. Either the people who are aware of this commercial investment, they are so rich that they are not really inclined of teaching somebody because, you know, they don't even have a time because they made so much money already. Right. Yeah, exactly. And now there are other side of it who are not familiar with it, like how to invest in commercial. Even sometimes you can really create a great result from the commercial investment. And especially, you know, again, if you are really a multi-skill where you can also have like residential element in it. So it becomes like, you know, imagine if you're going in a package, one investor might understand a little bit about commercial, but then he may not have much idea on the residential. But then if you have understanding on the residential, then maybe you may not have an idea of the commercial part. But that's where, you know, the surveyor role come into play. Because this is where, you know, it's important. Because all you need, if you can just get one surveyor or a commercial agent, that can make your life very easy. And that's where we play our role, where people can just come up with a deal or with anything. Even many times, you know, the way I work is completely different than other surveyors because we offer a lot of win-win services. So, or like incentivized structure where we're not just looking into the fees, but we can really save people a lot of money where we can just take a share. So rather than, you know, giving them any burden on the fees, they at least have a peace of mind that, you know, they will only pay us when they're saving from, you know, from us. And other thing is, you know, like I'm probably because of my qualification, my background is I studied chartered accountancy, so I understand the finances very well. I've studied surveying, so I understand the building from foundation to the roof. I've studied property law. I have fought over hundreds of cases in court, tribunal, high court, land chamber. So because of this multiple skill, you know, it is like a chess game. If somebody can see three steps ahead, you even if you can see one step ahead of them, you are in a winning game. And likewise, many times because of my multiple skill, I've managed to win many deals which other people can't really see. And I tell people one other thing is like what I can do, neither a surveyor can do on its own, or an accountant can do on its own, or a solicitor can do on its own. It's like one of the multiple skilled surveyor you will ever see.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, you know, because there was one solicitor's firm that came to me and said, you know, do you know someone who can do talk to the leaseholders about they were, like you said, they were looking to kick them out of their building. And that was like, wow, that can't be the case. You know, they're actually telling the solicitors, we're going to kick you out. Yeah. The solicitors have done nothing wrong. Yeah. They maintained everything while they were there. So it became a matter of what is going on here. So I recommended that they talk to you, only to find out that you're the guy that deals with their lease. And that was found very, very interesting because it's good to know people in high places. From that, I think, you know, everything got sorted out there in terms of their business, and they've still been okay in the staying where they are. So the most important thing is good to know a surveyor independently that can challenge, you know, landlords, you know, on this kind of thing. And, you know, by all means, just being part of this group, this is really good to know. What's been the sort of most difficult cases that you've had to deal with, or the typical kind of cases that people go to court for?
There are quite a few things where, especially the landlord, and so mostly they have a rent review issues where people go to, you know, third party arbitrator, expert, or even sometimes to high court. And especially these type of things, either the, you know, landlord or the tenant, they are unreasonable, or especially, you know, where the amount of dispute which is there is too high, especially in central London, sometimes just for a small bit. We've seen people just fight all the way. Like if you see some bigger investors like Freshwater Group, Grosvenor's, Cadogan's, you will see most of the time they're going to court because they don't really want to give up even for a small thing. Because if they give up on one block, then the other tenant will come and also will challenge for the next one. They'll say, you know, in that so-and-so case, you have allowed this much. Therefore, I should also get that. So they don't
want to domino effect.
Yeah, so they don't want to really leave anything. Other thing is also is managing expectations. Especially, you know, what happens is, this is another thing people don't really realize. If you're going and hiring any solicitor who may be probably good into residential, convincing, family law or criminal law or anything, but let's say if they are not specialized, commercial is very specialized. Even I'll tell you, people have come to me asking for an advice and not free advice. I've charged them. They've paid me money. Imagine the people who have studied law, practiced law. They come to me because it's so specialized field. Not everybody is aware. And now imagine many times solicitors probably finish the whole convincing, not even knowing, you know, what they've completed. Whenever those gray area comes in the lease, the disputes comes. You know, when the 5 years, 6 years time.
I do. I understand. Yeah. Totally. I've seen it. I've witnessed it.
And I've seen sometimes the blunder in the lease. Yeah, like, I won't say everything, but then I've seen some, even in one place, I found one small issues in a lease. And you know what? I was acting for the other client and I managed to sell that lease to somebody for £85,000. And this was a case where other agent could not sell for 1 year that property. I met the client in one meeting. I managed to sell it because I could identify that defect in that lease. Mm. And that defect become a benefit for the ingoing tenant. And that is where, you know, this multiple skills comes so much handy and beneficial. It's not that I can save people just money on this, on the professional fee, but also the result that I can get. That result, as I mentioned, neither a surveyor on its own, nor a solicitor or accountant can get on, you know, with their on its own skills. And that's why I always keep studying more and more. Normally, not every surveyor will be probably going and taking interest in law and legals. But I do, of course. I've studied continuously. And even while I've fought a lot of cases, I've been through many leases myself. Mm-hmm. So I think whenever the lease are not drafted properly, all these disputes comes. And if we draft it well, we manage that expectation well, that okay, fine. Even the rent review clause itself has so much detailed in, like, if there is a dispute, how it should be dealt, who should be appointed, if the surveyor is appointed, what that surveyor is supposed to do in what case. So everything has to be so properly written in the lease. Even then, the dilapidations is same thing. Like, there are many clauses that goes in the lease for dilapidations. And now many times solicitor I've seen, like, just copy paste, and they don't realize what they pasted basically there.
Yeah. Yeah, we have. And you know, I'm not mentioning any names of any solicitors because I don't want to get sued. No, I'm kidding. It is a, how can I put this? Conveyancing mainly focuses more on the residential side. You know, because again, people are looking to buy homes and sell homes quite often. And the same thing with the buy-to-let market. It's a lot more focused towards the residential market than it is the commercial market. Even if I look at the qualifications which are out there, advanced CMAP a long time ago, this is before the change between the FSA to the FCA happened. You had advanced CMAP and that covered a commercial element to it. You don't have that anymore. You know, the diploma for mortgage advice and practice, which is at the level 4 qualification, deals not on commercial. It deals with second charge market, which goes to say, well, goes to show us what they're anticipating is going to happen in the future. They want to look at more the second charge element rather than the commercial element. And what we're seeing at this moment on the high street, because let's face it, the buying habits have changed. People's buying habits are not high street focused as much. It's online. You mentioned it with your book. It's on Amazon.
Yes.
You know, a lot of the courses are online.
That's right.
Webinars and stuff like that. So there is a massive cultural shift which is happening as we speak. And coronavirus has been the catalyst effect to speed it up. You know? What do you feel now is the right time to get into commercial property? Or do you feel, you know what, hold back for a couple of months and wait until there's a different type of way of putting commercial out there?
Yeah, I'm always, keen of, doing the things now, not waiting. I mean, of course, first of all, like whenever I advise any of my client to buy a property, I normally, advise the way that they should always buy a property below market value. So whatever it's worth, you are having that much cushion right from the day one. Secondly, is always good because, there are so many things that are going on. One, in commercial property, if you're buying, the Section 24 of Financial Act, that doesn't apply to commercial. The 3% excess stamp duty, and then you can still claim your mortgage, interest of mortgage against your, rental income, which you can't do with residential. Second is, in commercial property, if you see, this is FRI, fully repairing and insuring, which means, effectively speaking, it is your gross income becomes your net income. Of course, apart from the tax that you have to pay on the income, because then your tenant is there who is looking after the place, who is looking after the repair, who is insuring your place, no headache at all. And you can really save time there. Third thing is, there's something called capital allowances. Of course, this is another thing. Neither the accountant has much idea about it, or the surveyor on its own will not have much idea. This need a combination of surveying skills and tax planning, or like accounting skills. So when you know, so this capital allowances makes a property portfolio more tax efficient. Like many times what I tell people is, like, in short, in one word, what I do is I'm like property problem solver, and I help people to make the most profit from their portfolio and make it more tax efficient at the same time. Because while you're making money, why to just give a share of that profit to the taxman? Keep as much as you can keep with you. And this capital allowances makes your property portfolio more efficient. Likewise, there are many things as well. Not many people are educated in how to invest in commercial property, as I mentioned, because they don't know how. There was not much training available. In fact, one of my book I've written is also on Amazon, A Guide to Commercial Property Conversion. There hardly, I think, anybody else has written a book on commercial property conversion. So that's also on Amazon. But also I've designed some courses. Now, what that do is, if there are less people out there who are educated how to invest in commercial property, means there is less competition. And that's why you may get many times a deal, which is, other people are not able to, get. I mean, so for example, let's say if there is a residential property in market for sale, you might get 20 people seeing with you, and then you have 20 people competitor on the same property. Whereas in the commercial property, you may not have the same numbers who are bidding against you. Right? So you will have very less people out there. Also in the commercial, people that you deal with, they're also professionals. You're not really dealing with any, low profile so with due respect, of course, the thing is, then you waste less time. You are really dealing with, even if it is a contract or construction or anything that you're doing, mostly you have all those people who are pretty much expert in it. You spend very less time, or you waste very less time. Even the professional tenant like Sainsbury, Tesco's and all those type of people, when we have dealt, it doesn't take much. I mean, initially, once the negotiation is done, it's very much smooth process. Your direct debit. So, I mean, the money that comes straight into your bank account. So you don't have to really chase your tenant or pay him or money. Even that commercial rent comes on quarterly basis. So you have quarterly rent received and direct in your bank account. No chasing you have to send. You don't even have to send anything to them. And also, in case if there's a default, you have much more power to enforce that to a commercial tenant as against to a residential. Because even many of the commercial leases will allow you to send a bill if they are more than 14 days in arrears.
Like what you, all of this, what you've said, many mortgage brokers don't know because they don't deal with this. I was one of the very fortunate ones. I attended an event that you was talking about. I'm not even going, it's very similar to your sort of training courses. But I've done the free event just to get an idea and keep my competence levels up. And funny enough, there's something about commercial. The surveyor, what they say goes, the banks are so willing to accept exactly what they're saying, there's no way that you can challenge it because there's no real comparables out there, which is what makes her commercial the hotbed in terms of investment. You may hear about the Russian oligarchies. You may hear about the the Arabs coming in and buying flats and so on and so forth in central London. But all the hedge funds, the structured products, the funding there, they're all focused on commercial.
Yes, that's why I said, you know, most of those professionals, people, high end, they, you will see them going into commercial. Even if you see a rental return, the commercial rental returns and the money that you make at the end of the day after taking out your mortgage is nearly double or triple than what you can make in. It's like, imagine, would you like to do 10 buy to let or one commercial conversion?
Yeah.
You'll say, I mean, it takes the same energy to do one deal. You'd rather doing one deal in commercial rather than going into 10 buy to let or, you know, wasting your energy. And that is the quickest way. I've seen many people making millions of pounds in just one or two deals. That's more than enough.
Because they've gone for the, that's where the whales are.
Yes, you
know?
Yes.
They say, don't ever fish for a prawn. You know, you can get a bucket full of prawns. That's 1,000 prawns there. Yeah?
Yeah.
But if you go for a whale,
yes,
you know,
one is more than enough.
You know, that's it. It's feeding you for life. You have to manage it properly, but it's feeding you for life. And this is the beautiful thing about commercial. Mixed residential and commercial.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this one is quite interesting because for some lenders, it falls into residential side. For some lenders, it falls into commercial. You know, so like the Aldermores, the NatWests of the world, they all look at mixed mixed use. So let's say a shop underneath and above it is two bedroom flat or three bedroom flat where the family can live in there. Where do they stand at this moment in time? You know, with, let's put it like this, ground rent, you know, the rent from the council, the business rates, all the rest of it. If they've got a mortgage on the property as well, which is actually a residential property. How are the council judging this? And more importantly, when someone's looking to buy these kinds of places, because they are turnkey businesses, regardless of what people will say, you know, it may not be hundreds of pounds spent straight away, but it's the drips and drabs that builds up with the high profit margins. If anyone has ever seen how much of a profit margin is on a packet of sweets, you know, a box of chocolates or a Mars bar, you know, you sell five of those, you made like 50, 60% profit straight away, you know? And that's why they're so close to schools. So with these kinds of places, a lot of people are like, well, you know what? It's based upon a certain land mass. So if it's 40%, you know, commercial, we're going to class it as commercial, you know? So where do you stand? Do you do the measurements of the property? Is it based upon square foot, square meters?
I mean, yeah, so basically many times we have to split into two parts. So commercial element, we have to look into a different way. Of course, we look at the rental return, plus we also go with the like-to-like comparable evidence for capital value of that property.
Yeah.
And then we take the residential as a separate so that, you know, we can compare. But then again, we have to make some allowances because, you know, the property on top of a commercial unit is not as desirable as something which is self-contained, convert like Victorian conversion or purpose-built blocks or something like that. So we got to discount that as well. And again, there are times where lenders are not happy to land on few properties on top of, you know, let's say if it is a restaurant, laundry, pubs, they don't prefer those kind of, you know, covenants to be on below the residential unit. So we again then discount that as well at the same time. But then again, there are various ways and we have to look the deal as one. You know, it's completely that, because sometimes people feel, okay, fine, they can offset. Like if one element is not doing well, at least the other element can come in and also offset some part of it. That's why some lender prefers, you know, at least if there's a commercial mix, it's better than just the commercial on its own.
Guys, listen, if you are watching this now or watching this on the replay and you're thoroughly enjoying this, let us know. If you've got a question about these kinds of things, ask it. This is your time. And personally, I am mesmerized by this because, you know, It's such a growth area. The whole point, what you are saying at this moment in time, you can do so much with commercial. You can have a consortium of people. You can have a buyer's club. The restrictions are not as heavy on commercial as they are on residential buy-to-lets. You know you're going to be getting a turnkey business. Mixed use. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the thing. Classifications of property use. Can someone change? For example, I bought a shell, you know, on the high street. I haven't bought it, I've bought the lease. But I want to convert that shell into a KFC or a McDonald's. You know, I've actually put in the planning permission and I put in the approval. Can that actually take place? Is it quite easy to change so A1 to A3, to be a bit more technical?
So of course, each council have their own policies, the development guidelines rules. Some councils are lenient than others, so they might probably encourage if they feel that, you know, business is going down in some place. Let's say if Tooting, like there are plenty of restaurants, you'll see. Then if you already see like 10 restaurants, then you're trying to open up the 11th one. So council will say, okay, hold on, let's see, why do we need even the 11th one? Or again, that's one part of it from a from a development point of view. But again, then you need to see the technically, because, you know, on, especially on a restaurant or KFC or takeaway, which is like A3 or A5, you need to satisfy so many things, fire regulations, how you're going to run your chimney, you know, stacks out or extractor out, and also whether it's going to affect the people living out, you know.
Regulations that go and with how, that.
So how will you deal with the noise, the smell, so many things, then you have to satisfy it. As long as you can accommodate the planner well, then by all means, yes, you can get a conversion. Of course, they even council do want, in a way, you know, the property should remain occupied. In many, even many places where the properties or commercial properties are getting struggling, I mean, the high streets are getting struggled, the councils are there to help. But then again, you got to present your proposal the way they like, or the way you accommodate a planner. That's very important, actually.
Yeah, of course. You know,
even there are some, apart from that, there are even many other conversions available from B2 to C3, which is like commercial to residential, which is permitted development. There are even new laws are coming now. Under permitted development, you can do a lot more, in fact. So there are other things can be added now. Even there was a one which is, of course, going to come from in effect from 1st of August. I mean, they're proposing that, you know, you can build two more story on top of a purpose-built block. Of course, there will to be few restrictions. And of course, I think it's not going to be on top of commercial, but in a purpose-built block where there is enough room, of course, you are supposed to not go more than 4 or 5 story, you can do certain, you know, conversions under permitted development. But then certainly, like looking at the commercial, that's also one of the lucrative part, that you can convert that commercial into something which is more valuable. And especially, you know, now many of those businesses are moving to online. So the high street is currently looking into a reformation where, of course, the way we used to do business 5-10 years ago, we won't be doing the business same way now going on, especially after the lockdown. I mean, this will become eased. Like, we'll have to see how we can do business completely in a different way. That's why many offices, those who were operating from the main high streets and all, they're considering even moving their offices or running most of the thing online and or in a different format. But then again, most of the retailers, like, you know, mostly which I've seen, even people, those who are taking it more likely like barbers, discount stores, or the, even off license are also getting hit because of this big stores like Sainsbury's, Tesco's, Asda's, because now they're going into the smaller. They're going even now, they used to be only in the bigger units. Now they are happy even to take a just couple of unit together, and then they are okay. So now Sainsbury has got their local, Tesco has got their, you know,
Metro.
And then it's becoming very difficult, especially for those off license and the small shops to survive in this, you know, competitive market.
Well, it's like what you said. I mean, a lot of the off licenses converted to Nisa's or Best Ways, or, you know, they converted into the shops that are the actual cash and carries. That they go and shop at. So the cash and carries have tried to establish their brand outside of just being a cash and carry, which is actually quite interesting. I mean, we see a lot more premieres which have opened up locally, you know, which also have their cash and carries with Bookers or 365, whatever they're now known as. Again, right now, what I'm seeing is that sooner or later, there's going to be a massive explosion in gyms. You know, health and fitness is always going to be a big thing. Are there going to be any kind of restrictions in terms of gyms, in terms of the plan permissions to set up a gym, that kind of stuff, more regulation on it? Especially if you look at things like mixed martial arts world, professional wrestling, boxing, kickboxing. They, you know, you can literally set up something in a very small area. You know?
I mean, to be honest, Hadi, I haven't got much involved in gym or those type of sector much. But I assume, I mean, of course, there has to be enough space for all those activities. Yeah. Those amenities, and people do need like this type of, you know, I think mostly I've seen like some halls or D1 units where people like to have some community or this type of things. So in fact, councils are also asking the developer when they come with a proposal of developing something that allows some unit. I mean, that is what I've noticed people doing. I mean, there was few project I've recently seen where they have deliberately allowed some D1 units, in fact, in the development itself.
Okay.
Because they don't want anything to wipe out, isn't it, from the street?
Yeah, I mean, also we're looking at like railway arches. You know, where British Rail still owns the arches, but they leased them out to, for example, MRT guys. Now, with, let's say I'm a mechanic. How would I be able to go out there and find a unit that I could actually say, all right, this would be, in terms of sourcing properties, because property sourcing is also a big, tricky element. So as a commercial surveyor, right, or maybe even going into your property mastering class, just taking a small part of it, because I don't want to give everything away. I would like, you know, if people are interested. People are interested in it, they should come and see.
In short, there are a few things. Like, you go through a search where you can go through commercial agents. They have a list of properties. Normally, even council approaches them. Even sometimes local council also have a list where you can ask them if they have the, you know, list of the places that they are looking to let. So you can approach the councils as well directly if they have something available. You know, so that's another way. And and of course, boards are there. Of course, many times you might probably find when the boards are available, you can just see and call those people out. So that's
Billboards.
I mean, you know,
billboards. Boards. Yeah, board power. Yeah.
Course, so you see them, whenever they are available, then you can see. And many times, of course, you can speak to the owner, the people who are looking to, you know, come out of the lease. You can simply assign. I mean, they take assignment from them. So that's another way of, you know, paying. Or maybe if it is a decent place, you probably sometimes they will expect a premium. You can offer them a premium and they may be willing to go out, because many times people do get retired. You know, like if they've done a business for donkey's years, like I've seen some people like in the business for 40, 30, 50 years. Especially this MOT garage and all. And then their next generation do not want to run those things. So you can ask them, you know, would you be happy to, you know, assign me the lease? And then you can take the lease over from those people.
Now, here's a question for you. Estate agents, generally, you know, they'll sometimes, when they do proper advertising, they'll get inquiries. Some of the inquiries that will be in there will be about commercial. You know, commercial valuations. I have this property, which is an office, and I would like to sell it or I'd like to rent it out. Should an estate agent contact yourself to go in and do the valuation and then, you know, market it that way? Or should they just pretty much, you know, try and check it out via the internet if they can, if they haven't got the qualification? What is the best way of, you know, converting an inquiry for a commercial property into something that will be on their stock that they can get rid of?
You mean to say from a seller's point of or like the landlord's point of view? If landlord has a property to let out?
From me, I'm an estate agent. I decide to say, right, I can market our properties, so on and so forth. I can inquire you for a commercial unit.
Right, yeah.
I have no idea, really. I've got no idea how to value it, where to start from, what to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's where, you know, they need to approach either a surveyor. Of course, if they approach a surveyor and get a formal valuation, they may end up paying some money. But the other way is they can go to a commercial agent as well. Because normally if it is a commercial agent, they would know what's the going rate, or like they would have let something else in that area, and then they would be able to assess to an extent that, you know, this is what we can try it out, you know, market, and then we'll see. Of course, they also keep some markup and then say, you know, we will review it after 2 to 3 weeks. If at this level we are getting enough interest, then we'll keep it. Otherwise, we'll drop it down. But of course, mostly I would say the always go and find the right commercial agent who is active in the area. They would definitely know what the going rate is, because they must have let something or other. Or the surveyor is the other option. You can hire a surveyor. But then when you hire a surveyor for a valuation, normally, of course, they will not be coming out for free to do valuation. But the commercial agent, because in a hope to get a business, they might come. But then I guess their value may not be that accurate, or they don't have to even certified anything. But at least they can say, okay, this is what we feel it is worth. Let's try it at that price.
That's fine. That's good to know. So, guys, again, if you're watching this on the replay and you are an estate agent that's had that kind of inquiry, Sumit is here. This is his, you know, his
of course, means contact my company, which is Global Property Consulting, or just email me on sumit@global-property-consulting.com, and we'll be happy to help. We do also commercial lettings and also valuations.
There was one other question that was approached to me when I was putting this out, and that was an inquiry, a hypothetical one, which was, I've got this commercial unit, I'm the landlord. The tenants have been taking the money, but they haven't paid me the money over 8 months. How do I get them out? How do I do this? How do I pay, you know, how do I get my money back? Or can I offset it?
Is it a commercial tenant?
Oh. Yeah, it's a commercial. Commercial tenant's not paying them.
And they're not paying for that long, is it? Or, I mean, usually, of course, you do not wait for that long, because most of the clauses in the lease will allow that, but, you know, whenever even they are late, you can send them a reminder, or even you have a right to appoint bailiff. And normally bailiffs can be appointed from two. I mean, depends what clauses. I mean, the first thing you need to see is see the provisions in your lease, what it says. In case of default, it will clearly set out that you can probably appoint a bailiff, send a reminder, or whatever the notice you need to serve. There's like various notices, section 146 and other notices as well. Section 146 is in the case of breach of any covenant, but you only exercise at the end, not, you know, for small things. Yeah. But for this thing, even you can appoint a bailiff. Most of the lease will allow that when there is a outstanding for more than certain amount of time, let's say 14 days, 21 days, you have a right to send bailiff for two reasons. One, you can even have a bailiff for forfeiture, or bailiff for distraint. I mean, you can have a warrant for distraint. Like, so either they can go to the shop and thread them up. They're saying, you know, we'll take a goods if worth that amount if you're not paying the money, or they will have a bailiff for forfeiture where they can simply forfeit the lease. They can lock the whole shop and put the notice there that lease has been forfeited. If you want it back, pay all the dues, including their cost.
That is amazing, because that's actually happened. One place that I know, which is on Fortnoy High Street, which is very close to where I live in Surrey. And basically, it was a Morley's, you know, chicken and chip shop.
And that's more beautiful. You know, like when you are the landlord of a commercial property, it's easy. Like it's other way around. In a residential property, if you need to evict a tenant, you basically have to do all the exercise. Get the court order and then get them out. Mm-hmm. Here is other way around. You basically forfeit the lease. If let tenant want the property back, let him go to the, so he goes to the court and he has something called relief against forfeiture, which means they can go out to the court, say, you know, Mr. or judge, my lease has been forfeited. I want my property back. Can you give me order? And mostly judge would say, okay, fine. What was the default? This amount. So they'll put all the amount, outstanding, bailiff cost, locksmith cost, all those things. Say, okay, here is the bill. Pay that money to the landlord and you get your property back. You see, the landlord is always, you know, in a winning position in commercial property.
Well, this is the best thing about commercial, is that the law is literally on the landlord's side in that sense. Because it's about business. And if you can't make it work in business, you know, maybe you should step back and just hold on. It's not a bad thing. It's just the timing, you know. But that's why you always need to have a good coach behind you and make sure that you're motivated and you know what you're doing, and keep constantly learning and developing yourself so that you professionally will always be okay, you know. Otherwise, you have to go to the bailiffs. Yeah, I understand that. You know, so the landlords, you have to always deal with the bailiffs that will come in and seize the property and all the rest of it. But again, commercial is just like fascinating because there's so many different areas. And more importantly, like what you said, people do invest in commercial for less than a pound at some places, you know.
Yes.
They can do it as a consortium. They can do it as a, you know what, I'm going to buy this as a business. And they can negotiate, you know, IOUs and stuff like that. They will buy businesses for the losses. You know, if you ever read or listened to Rich Dad, Poor Dad, you know, Robert Kiyosaki, when he lost his business, he had investors come and buy his business for the losses so that they wouldn't have to declare it on the taxes. Sorry, they could offset it against the taxes. And the same thing here. That hasn't changed. You know, the commercial is definitely one of the best prospects out there. But like I said before, it is very tough to get into because the lack of awareness. Not many people know how to get into commercial. And, you know, it's fascinating. There was one other thing that I wanted to mention, which is that we're going to be coming close to the end of our time. Guys, if you've been watching this on the replay and would like to ask any more questions, post it. Summit is part of this group as well. He has his own group, which is a property mastermind.
So every month property investors meetup every last Saturday of the month. We do that, and then you can join us on the Facebook. You'll get all the links. So every month we run it, and we have a different speakers, myself speaking many times, and also we have a mortgage update. So everything, I mean, you know, like we say, your network is your net worth. So the more people, it's very important, more than what you know, than who you know. If you know the right, in real estate, it works a lot. You know, if you know the right people, imagine if rather than going even 10 places, even if you know the right person who can really give you the solutions for all that, or if you have a right team in place, all you need is a good surveyor, good solicitor, good mortgage advisor, a good accountant.
Once this guy, good mortgage advisor. Everyone knows that.
Yeah, you can contact Adi for mortgages. So this is, you know, and especially, you know, I always say, go to the people who are into the property investment. So we as a surveyor, or when we choose a surveyor, solicitor, accountant, or a mortgage broker, go to somebody who have their own property portfolio. So they will understand it very well from an investment point of view. Many times I've done a deal with many people. I don't really look at from just the surveying point of view. Even if somebody approaches me, say, Sumit, here is a deal, you know, rather than paying you a fee, or I can't afford to pay a fee initially, but can we do a deal together in a joint venture? I'll say, oh yeah, by all means, of course, let's work together. And I've done many deals which they would have not done otherwise on their own. So they are making money. It's a win-win situation.
Guys, listen, you have no idea. If you've not been in this game before with the commercial side, if you've never heard about this, believe me, I've known guys out there who well and truly managed to secure deals from guys who are buying their properties. You know, I'm talking about the commercial properties that were actually government backed. Not the UK government, foreign investor government. You think Huawei was bad? Oh, you have no idea. You know, there's a lot of people looking to get into the UK from various different areas. And again, yes, you still have to do the money laundering checks, hence why you need to have the right people in place in terms of solicitors. You need to have the right surveyors in place that understand the property, that you're not overpaying for it because you want to get a return on your investment. This is a completely different game, but it's a safer game because the risk isn't on you. Like what we say on traditional buy-to-lets, if you're having the property managed on a traditional buy-to-let residential, and what happens with that, you have to do, let's say, a boiler repair. Well, that comes off of the gross rent.
Yes.
That's not the case with commercial. And even if it's a little shop, which is selling sweets and, you know, a confectionery shop, or news agents, they are paying for everything. You're not.
Yeah. So actually, your gross income becomes your net income.
Exactly.
Because apart from paying the basic things on tax and everything else,
making it far more beneficial. You need to have, in any investor group, diversification of investments, which is clear. Most millionaires have seven streams of income. Property is always one of them, you know. And if you can get into property for very little, do it. You know, I'm not doing this for the sake of it. I'm doing it because I do want clients. But my knowledge helps people. And Sumit's knowledge is helping people. And that's why I wanted to introduce him today, to help people in this group feel, you know what, let's do it. Let's manage it out there. Sumit, which other areas do you cover in terms of geographic areas? Do you only cover London? Do you cover outside of London?
So normally I've got like business operating from London, Kent and Surrey. But then having said that, again, because we work sometimes with other surveyors as well. So even if there is a job outside anywhere in UK, we can get the job done through our associate surveyors. But majority of our business is done in London, Kent or Surrey.
Brilliant. Okay. Sumit, how can people get in contact with you? What is the best way to contact you?
So you can contact my surveying practice, which is Global Property Consulting. The email address is Sumit, S-U-M-I-T, at global-property-consulting.com. Also, you can probably reach out to me through YouTube channels. I've got a lot of other training videos available on my YouTube channel, which is Global Property Consulting, Property Expert Academy, some Success Resources Ventures. So just do search for those channels. You'll find a lot of helpful videos, even some property related video series there as well. And then do meetups on, we do meetup where personally, I myself personally is present in every single meeting, which we do last Saturday of the month. So you can meet us on the Property Investors Meetup. That's another way of, you know, meeting me personally. And of course, and also through the Facebook. So you will find most of the links which I've already posted in this group, as well as you can just follow my link on Facebook, which is Sumit Gupta, and you will be able to get most of the link under my profile as well.
And of course, Sumit, please feel free to leave your links in the comment section after the live is finished. Again, this has been a fantastic insight into the world of commercial surveying, commercial properties, how to get into it. Some of the terminology is extremely it's high jargon, and if you don't have the right people there to break down the jargon, you don't want to be taken for a ride, you know, as a consumer, either as a landlord or as a tenant. You need to be protected at every point, and this is one of the benefits of being in this group, that you have access to Sumit. So if you ever need to ask a question, feel free, ask a question, put the question in the group at any time. Mondays are the only times that you can put in your links to your business. Every other time you can ask any kind of questions, anything. There are people here to help you. If you're watching this live or watching this on replay, thank you so much for being part of this. Normally I'll do a Facebook Live, you know, tomorrow in the evenings, but unfortunately I'm not gonna be able to do it. Tomorrow I'm gonna be meeting up with quite a few of my friends, because lockdown's pretty much finished. I want to get out there and enjoy some food before we go back into lockdown again, because there's a second wave that's going to be coming in 2 weeks from now. Sorry, I know, I'm scaring everyone now. But yeah, I'm going to be going out, and it's going to be Eid on Saturday or Friday, Saturday. So if you are, you know, Eid Mubarak to each and every one of my Muslim brothers, you know, and sisters. So guys, take care of yourselves. Have a wonderful week. I will be putting more things in there. If you join the group now and you've seen this and you're happy with it, this is one of the best things about this group. We're a community at the end of the day. And feel free to share, like, join other groups. Do whatever you feel is happy. But don't spam this group with Facebook Live videos of you just sitting there doing nothing. Sorry, Danny DB. You may be a cute guy in terms of your model looks, but you can't do that on a Tuesday. Anyway, have a wonderful evening, people. Take care of yourselves. It's been a pleasure. Thanks. Take care of yourselves. Bye. Bye.
Thank you. Take care. Bye now.